April 17, 2023, it's Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Pedro Show. Happy Monday. Started off with Miles Davis when he had John Coltrane in his band. This is live at the Olympia Theater, Paris, March 21, 1960, Olio. And we had J.P. Lemke and EDME with Music for Hotels. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but you could tell people I am not man alone because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got with me, all the way from Eugene, Oregon, J.P. Lemke. Welcome aboard, J.P.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate being on the show.
Absolute. And we got to give credit, Brother Randolph, for the connect.
Yes, thank you, Randolph. Absolute.
So we want to learn about how you come up with this music and what kind of journey it took to get to where you are now. So please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Well, my mom was a music teacher. She's kind of out of that now. She's old and retired. But I remember being a kid, and she was playing guitar for church at the time, still does. And I remember hearing that as a kid, but I think more prominently than that, she was teaching all my older siblings piano. I was about 5 years old at the time, I remember this. And I really, really wanted to play piano. I just loved the idea of playing piano, and my mom could hardly keep me off of it, and I really, really wanted to do it. But she was kind of delaying on me, she told me later, because she didn't want to start me so young. But she gave up when I was six and decided that she was going to do it. So I remember we had, like, the... Anyone who learned piano might know these, like the James Bastian method books that had like different colors. Like you have your primer level and your level one. I think the level one is purple and level two is blue. And I had to just race through all those and beat out all my other siblings and be the best pianist. So in like the first year, I think I did like the first three books in the primer, and then I got to level four, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm past everyone else, and it kind of slowed down a bit after that.
So it was a positive experience.
Oh, yeah, very positive
experience. No, I say that, JP, because a lot of the guests I have on the show, God, next month it'll be 22 years, most of them, the piano lesson experience almost drove them away from music. I think it had a lot to do with the teacher.
Yeah, that's such a shame. I'm now a music teacher myself, but I feel like, I don't know, I had a lot of like individual drive to it. I was very drawn to it. And my mom's a nice person, so it worked out pretty well for me.
Usually it's tough when it's that close of a connect, right? Because they'll use other forms of, I don't know, control. You know, I mean, but maybe it's good. Man, that's why I have different people on the show, not the same cat, because we all got different ways of doing music, learning it, doing it, you know, ideas about it. So let me ask you this. I know that you had a piano and a pad. Did you have other kind of instruments?
Let's see. I mentioned my mom's guitar, but I never learned to play that. And my sisters and brothers having their own instruments, like my sister played saxophone, and both my sisters got electric guitars at some point. I did eventually end up picking up that saxophone.
So there was some cross-pollinization, that the fiefdoms of the instruments.
Yeah. It took a while, though, right? Just like I started playing piano when I was like six, and sure, it wasn't until I started band that I explored other instruments.
Well, let me ask you about school. Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did all the things I could. I went to a really small school, so kind of limited options. But I started band in fifth grade. And then, like, we had a combined junior high, senior high band. So once I got into seventh grade, I was a part of that.
I'm curious, because it's hard to march with a piano. So what did you work? Play?
I picked up the euphonium.
That's what I'm trying to learn right now. Fuck, is it hard. But it's bass clef, though. Yeah, I got this motherfucker in the late 80s on tour, and I'm finally now learning. It's got a mouthpiece like a bone. It's a big one. But bass clef and stuff. Very close to the baritone horn. only slight difference. All this time I thought I had a baritone horn, but I found out a few months ago it's a euphonium.
Yeah, I thought I had a baritone when I started too.
It's where the valves are and the way they taper the tube, but they're pretty close.
Yeah, so I picked up that when I started in fifth grade. I intended to move to tuba, but I just never did. We never did any like field marching. You mentioned marching, but we definitely like marched in the Wallace, Nebraska parade.
Like at football football games or Thanksgiving or Christmas or stuff. Let me ask you this: first record you bought with your own money?
I think I would have been a teenager, probably around 16. I bought. Oh, get this. I remember buying Evanescence's big album. What is the name of that album? The one that had all their original hits on it. And also I got Death Magnetic by, why am I forgetting the name of that group?
Well, you know when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so that's why I asked
Metallica,
that question.
Of course, Metallica.
Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't tell you that answer. What about the first gig that you saw?
What counts as a gig? Because
Live
performance of music. That's like a really good question. Probably so young that I couldn't remember it properly. But I do remember going to see like the Nutcracker Suite, you know, the ballet.
Sure, sure.
At like the local community theater in a nearby town.
I had one of those, I found in some fucking costume shop, you know, the Rat King and his little army. I found one of the mouse suits, and I fucking wore it for a project called the Madonna Beast. Because, you know, it wasn't our own material, and I thought it was side mouse and Madonna's work. So I tried to wear the head once, and it almost killed me. So I wore it without the head, but the big old mouse ass and the tail, and you know what's a trip about it? Zipper in the back. So now I think I know what it feels like for women wearing bras. It's fucked up. You know, when you have the buttons in the front, it's a lot more calm. So let me ask you this. After school, but not graduate, in the afternoon, did you get into the basement band, the bedroom band, the garage band thing?
Did I? You know, I never had like a band that, you know, we played like pop or rock music or anything like that. I don't even think there was one in the tiny little town I grew up in. I don't think anyone was doing it.
Okay.
There were only like 300 people.
No, that makes sense. I mean, you know, like I said, everybody comes from different places. You gave me this tune here. Shoes are your choice. I want to play it.
I have this pair of Chelsea boots. They are forest green. I got them very recently. They are waterproof, which is fantastic for Oregon. But the selling point on these shoes were that they smell like lemon. The whole concept of the brand is that they have these shoes that smell like lemons. And it smells insanely like lemon drops, which is amazing. Because when I'm like working and wearing these shoes, they just smell like frickin' lemons. They're wonderful.
When I was in ninth grade, I played basketball and I had these shoes. They were blue, white, and gold, and they were Nike high tops for when I played basketball. But I was shit at basketball. So the shoes were like one of two things that I got from basketball. The second thing was a lesson in the fact that I can't run. And that when you run that fast, they squeak.
When I was in sixth grade, I had this pair of penny loafers. And I didn't realize they were penny loafers until the day before 50s Day, when my mom informed me that they were penny loafers. So I put pennies in them and I wore them to school, which was a great idea until PE came around and I realized I didn't have tennis shoes. So I ran around the track in penny loafers. It wasn't fun.
I have a pair of black suede ankle boots that have zippers on the inside of each ankle. And although they are probably the cheapest shoes I own, they are the ones I wear the most often day to day because they are insanely comfortable.
I have a pair of leather boots that, although seem like work boots, they have a very stiff sole, almost wood. and they have hobnail in it, which is a very old school style boot. And the reason why I bought these boots is because my great uncle used to wear these old style boots exactly like that. But he wore them everywhere. It didn't matter where it was, work or going to a party. So that's why I got these boots.
I have this pair of, they're black shoes. I just describe them as nice shoes because I have no idea what they're made of. Maybe it's like a fake leather or something. I got them in, man, it had been like my freshman year of high school, and I still have them. I probably got them because I was in like speech or something, like competitive speaking, and I needed nice shoes. And now they've continued to be like my nice shoes, except they're like really scuffed and I never polished them. And like the laces are way too long because the old laces broke. And so I relaced it with something that's super long. So I tie like super big bows with them and then I tuck that into my shoes. So it doesn't look like I'm walking around with these giant bows. So yeah, they'll probably continue to live with me until they completely fall apart.
Magawa, no, Magawa, Radiophone romantique. Thank you.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show. That chunk of music style with J.P. Lemke.
And, it's Lemke, actually. Lemke.
Oh, shit. Okay. anglicized.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's okay. You know, you deserve to fucking decide how your name's going to be said. Not fucking Walk for Pedro. And by saying this, is it an acronym, EDME, or is it a word? Is that EDME?
At EDME, at Eugene Difficult Music Ensemble.
Okay, that's what I thought, because I played a bunch from the, they had a big convention, right, a big gig, and I had Randolph and Graham on there, and we played a bunch of that. So EDME, yeah, so I was 50% there. Mm-hmm. So Lemke, people, don't let Idiot from Pedro steer you wrong. So, Shoes of Your Choice. Then we had the Chunks, brand new out of Scotland, not England. I've been saying Puppet Midnight, that bass man. He's from the wrong land. Sorry. Fuck. I blow a lot of clams. Let's put it. But I don't mean to. But I will apologize. No problem. Greg Turner Group after that. Greg Turner's got a new album. What Can I Do to Make You Love Me? This is Greg Turner from VOM, Angry Smones. Teaches calculus, right? At the University of New Mexico. Or is it? Well, some university out there. Planning for Burial, Late 20s Blues, Hand Model Within Joy, Infinite River, Prequel, Track 2. Yao Bobby and Simon Grab with Fagden. Brand new stuff. 19 minutes, 40 seconds. Is that a band name? Etherodiaphone Romantique. Is that a title? And then finally, J.P. Lemke and EDME with exclamation point even, people. With. Okay. Continue on now with the saga. So you don't do these bedroom band, garage band, basement band. You do graduate high school?
Yep.
Do you go to higher education to further your music trip?
I do. I go to the University of Nebraska at Kearney, and I decide that I'm going to study piano and composition there.
Kearney, way in the west. I played that town once.
Oh, really?
It's well, not Kearney, people. It's Gaelic, so it's Kearney. And there's a there's a weird kind of sculpture over the freeway there at I-80. Like yep. The prairie, some celebration of the prairie with the, it's a trippiest thing, kind of like stainless steel. And I remember we were doing a soft song, my version of Daniel Johnson's Walking the Cow, and you could hear the dudes with the baseball hats drowning us out per year with the fucking foosball. You know this game with the little ball? Yeah. So that's my Kearney. Well, there's more to it. You got to read the diary, but it was pretty intense. We conked at a house. This bad, the cat's parents, Christmas should be every day. So it's like, you know, yeah, I don't know, May or something when there's little white things and Christmas decorations. That was a trip. So that's my Kearney thing. So you went to school there for music?
Yep.
Okay. How about that experience?
Interesting. I think it really drove me to write music the way I still do. Very formative for me. So for one, it was a big development for me on piano where I, you know, I'd kind of been – my mom was my teacher, like I said, and she kind of stopped doing that when I was like seventh or eighth grade, and I just continued to play on my own. And I had awful technique. So I'm really grateful to the instructor I had. She was amazing and really helped me on that front. And then like on the composition side of things, I got exposed to a lot of composers I hadn't heard before. Penderecki, Xenakis, I remember being big influences at the time. Oliveros, who continues to be a big influence for the ensemble as well. And so that really changed my perspective around music. John Cage, too. Might as well throw in Cage.
Yeah, we all owe him. I remember Carl Stone had a show called Imaginary Landscape on KPFK when I was a teenager here. And man, the trippiest musics I heard. I mean, the whole idea of what is music, right? John Cage is always asking that question. Interesting.
Yeah.
So during this time, you're just doing independent study at the school. You're not in any kind of ensembles?
Oh, yeah. I'm doing ensembles, too, at the time. So I continued in band. Continued to play my euphonium through the next 4 years while I was there. And actually took a couple private lessons in euphonium, too. Why not? And I also joined a new music ensemble. So got to play some interesting and weird things. I remember, what's it called? Workers Union? Andreasen, I think, is the composer, as like a big highlight from that.
So you were just a member. You weren't heading this ensemble.
No. I was headed by a faculty member, by the composition instructor.
Okay. So it was kind of like part of the class, education?
Yeah, I took it as a class initially, and then I just continued to sign up for, I didn't get any credit for it. I just joined and performed with it.
And what about, does this ensemble do any of your own compositions?
You know, we never had any student compositions in the new music ensemble officially. We would just, like, find each other and put together our own recitals. Like, you were required to do a junior and a senior composition recital in addition to my piano recitals. So I just put together the performers myself, and the other composers would do the same. We'd often play on each other's pieces. The composition instructor did a new music festival that I would always sign up for and perform. Whoever submitted and got accepted into that.
Now what about, like, gigs? Was there venues around the campus or somewhere in Kearney? I can't remember the place I played. Shit. Kind of a loss. I'm sorry. It's probably in the diary up on the Hoot page, but did you do stuff like that? You know, like, dudes who were whooping up a bedroom band and wanted to take it to the people.
Yeah, no, I never really did that sort of thing.
Even with colleagues at the school. Okay.
Yeah. Really, really occupied with university. The closest I think I got to community outreach of any sort was, like, since I still played low brass, we did low brass Valentines for people that they paid for. Super hokey and awesome. Like, you get a cheesy love song, and we'd bring it to someone either at the university or out in the community and play for them on the spot.
Really? Whoa.
Yeah.
Like a singing telegram trip.
Yeah, a singing telegram, but with, like, a tuba and a euphonium or a trombone.
Wow, that's a gig. I would call that a gig.
Yeah, we'll count it.
Now, it's almost a command performance, right, for one cat, but, you know, you got to work the room or work the porch or, you know, the doorstep or some shit like that. Yeah, what a trip. So how long were you there, Kearney?
4 years. I joined in 2012. I signed up for classes in August of that year, and then I finished in 2016, spring of.
And what's next?
Well, I went and I continued to overeducate myself. I went to Arizona State. I got into the composition program there.
Sun Devils.
Yep. Got a job as a teaching assistant, helping with the theory.
You know, that's trippy. You would pick that school. That school's got a reputation as a party school.
You know, I never really saw it.
Okay, that's all right. So, Santa Barbara, there's certain Chico, there's certain schools, right, that have a kind of – but maybe, yeah. I mean, of all the schools to pick for – because this is, like, way higher education.
Oh, yeah. I mean, master's program.
Yeah.
I mean, the school, it was a major difference from where I was at, right? So
Tempe.
Yeah, University of Nebraska-Kearney. There's like 100, 150 students in total, like in all the music programs. And at Arizona State, I want to say this was probably closer to 600 to 800 students.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. It, just in the school of music, so... like I found that I had there were a lot more like really good performers around me and people who were interested in experimenting and doing new music.
Yeah.
So I'd like write for people for their recitals or whatever. And there was a Society of Composers Inc. group. So I joined that and we put on concerts by ourselves. The composition studio was very active about doing concerts about quarterly, I want to say.
Yeah.
And I formed my second year. I tried to form a little trio, performing new music. We performed one gig. We didn't really last.
And no recording.
Did we record? I don't think we recorded it.
No, not that specific event, but you're not really doing recording at this time.
Oh, I am. I'm recording my own pieces, right? So some of the things I sent you were from my time there.
Oh, okay. Like Man Alone.
Yeah. So just like me and whoever I was partnering with.
Oh, so you did have people, the kind of ensembles?
Ensembles, individuals, like whatever we could hack together. It was kind of on a case by case basis, right? You just like find the people you needed for the performance.
Sure.
Make the performance happen.
That's interesting. So the piece dictates, not like the band dictates the piece.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that makes sense. Look, we're at the end of the first hour. April 17, 2023, this WAP Pedro Show. Special guest, J.P. Lemke. Hold tight for hour two. April 17, 2023. It's the second hour of WAP Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show, start off the second hour. J.P. Lemke and EDME with Neither N Nor N. Whoa, that's a Kanye drum. Noisuke after that with If an Apple Were to Invade a Two-Dimensional World. And finally, EDME with, no, this is a solo version, Glenn Sog. Gestures. So you supplied the music and you had these cats do it?
This is a case of Eugene Difficult Music Ensemble's work. So this is pretty early on. I want to say back in 2019, maybe 2020. We started the group not long ago, and this composer from Portland, Glenn Sog, reached out to us and said, I've got a couple of pieces. And at the time, we were just kind of doing graphic scores and text-based scores, things that didn't really need much rehearsal. And Gestures was one of those pieces. And the solo version that you played was done by a percussionist at the time, Kathy Shea. So she put together all the different instruments, I guess, for it. Instruments includes onion skins, among other things. And performed her own distinct version of it, yeah?
Yeah, we should give her credit. Is it C-A-T-H-Y?
K-A-T-H-I-E.
It's K. Okay, it's K. With I. Okay.
Yep.
And Shay, S-H-E-A.
Oh, I wish. Yeah. S-H-I-E-H, I believe.
S-H-I-E-H. Okay.
Or H-S, sorry, H-S-I-E-H.
S-H-I-E-H.
Okay. It starts with H.
H-I-E-H.
H-S-I-E-H. Oh, here, I'll put it in the chat.
It might be Asian.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just want to put down, I mean, this don't have to be fucking on air, but
it's okay, you wouldn't have guessed that's better.
We're letting people peek behind the curtain here. Right? Remember Wizard of Oz, Frank Morgan? Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. He was the fucking dude behind the curtain. Okay. Is Eugene the next stop for you after fucking Tempe?
Yep, it is. Okay. I came up here after I graduated with my master's, and I started a doctorate in music theory, of all things. I was trying to change it up. I found out I wasn't really into that as much as I thought I was. And then I tried to swap over for a doctorate in data-driven instruments. And then I quit after me and the head of that department didn't quite see eye to eye and moved on to teaching as a job, piano teaching.
And Eugene, what school was this? Was this University of Oregon?
Yeah, it was University of Oregon.
Ducks.
Yep.
Okay. So... Yeah,
the whatever you call it, traditional institutional learning, and worked for you for a while, but then, you know, those things happen. And then you run into some people off campus to play music with.
Well, I do, and we kind of connected at the university while I was there. So what happened and how EDME, like, formed was that I had a couple friends in the music department. Kathy Shea was one of them. The other one was Milton Fernandez. And Milton in particular approached me and said, there's this guy I know. He's looking to commission a work for an event that's downtown in Eugene. And I said, sure, I'm interested. And that's how I got to know Lee Templeton. And he was really the brainchild of the group. So I wrote a piece, like, on a very tight time constraint. I only had, like, a couple weeks. /schwa was what it was. And we performed it in a sports bar, of all places, downtown, as part of this event he was hosting. And, like, from there, he formed...
If it was a sports bar, can I ask you if the fucking TVs were going?
The TVs were probably going.
Yeah, I can't fucking believe that shit. I've had to do gigs. And get this. Yeah, and sometimes, like, there's 20 TVs. They're all on different channels. Okay. Look, I'm going to play some... was that gig a success?
You know, it's such a weird thing. I would say, yeah. Like, there were people who came for the event who were there and they loved it.
Okay.
And there were people who were there in the bar who wanted to just be in the bar and they hated it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. But like Farmer would tell you, you want a good crop, use a lot of manure.
Yeah.
You gave me this Teach Yourself to Fly. I want to play it.
Sure.
Watt for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with J.P. Lemke in EDME, Teach Yourself to Fly. Ray Shin from Reno, Nevada after that with Last Bus to Long Beach. And finally, J.P. Lemke in EDME with Debt Rot, Bach Está Muerto. So it wrote. Said Death Wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Sometimes it gets euros, sometimes it don't. Anyway, so now that you broke the water with that piece, this starts turning into a regular ensemble?
Yeah, and we were just performing at bars and that wherever we could around, like Funnigan Games, which is a game shop. They hosted us a couple times. And so did Old Nick's, a bar in town that they had a couple people, one in particular, who loved new music and wanted to have new music nights. So we were doing that for a while, doing audience-led pieces too, what we called graphic score evocations, where we would invite audience members up to join us in interpreting a graphic score.
When you're talking about us, how big's the ensemble at this point?
We are just a quartet in the beginning. So it's just the original Lee, me, Kathy, and Milton for a while.
Right. And multi-instrumentalists?
Milton on piano, okay. Me doing electronics,
yeah.
Kathy doing percussion, and Lee sometimes helping, but mostly just running the show at this point.
So you got like a table in front of you with a bunch of boxes and shit? Is it laptop? Or is it? Because you know some of these bands, the laptop, right? The guy just hits a space bar.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Okay.
Just I try curious. To be more interactive than that.
Well, sometimes they'll put like a sheet around the table so you can't see the legs or something. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, but you're also involved in the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So
tell me about that. Like they're involved because it's a dynamic kind of composition. It's changing in the moment.
Yeah. I mean, since we were mostly doing text-based and graphic scores, we thought it'd be a good idea to bring in the audience with it. Or invite, if there was another band playing that night, invite them to join us and interpret a graphic score together.
And how did that actually work in real time?
Let's give an example. So I remember one time we had a text-based score, also from Glenn Sogg, and we just projected it on the wall of this venue in the Wit in Eugene. And we gave the audience toy instruments, or if they brought instruments, sure, because there are other people performing that night. And we just, like, performed it all together so that there are clear instructions, like, projected to them, and we're all following along.
And, you know, to me, always the trip of improvised. Well, these were not really improvised, though, right? Because you said there's a score everybody's following. Or does the score contains improvised portions?
Well, they're very general scores, okay. Right? Like, yeah. I think of the one that we played, the example I gave, it would be like you'd see the word louder on screen, or Forte. Sparse, or quiet, or something like that.
Pianissimo. Okay. Yeah. Remember all the Italian words, right? Because opera.
Yeah, just English words, actually.
Yeah, but you know the tradition, all these.
Yep.
People ask me why there's so much Italian. It was because opera, right? And they were the first guys to kind of sell manuscripts. Because there's no recordings, and there's no real way to, like, share music. They kind of came up with that, so that's why a lot of those old words are like that. But, yeah, why involve another discipline on people? Like, yeah, you got to know what this fucking foreign word means to be part of the band.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, April 17, 2023, Dish Watt Peter Show special guest, J.P. Lemke. Hotel Bio 3! April 17, 2023, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. Thank you.
gotta say, I'm really sick of driving to work all the time. I might start taking the bus. It's pretty cheap. I'll save a lot on gas and car repairs in the long run.
You know the bus system sucks, right?
So?
So? I took it once. 3 hours to make it 10 miles. 3 hours! Last mistake I ever make.
Maybe it was an off day.
I'm not willing to risk it again. Would not recommend.
Fine. What would you have me do?
Carpool, man.
Yeah, but I don't want to have to organize all that.
It's worth it. Trust me.
By the way, you were sure to turn the thing off, right?
What?
You know, the thing.
What thing?
I know you know what I'm talking about. The thing.
Oh, right. Let's see. Did I turn it off? I'm having a hard time recalling. I don't know.
Yes or no?
Not sure.
Give me your best guess.
Then I would be inclined to lead towards the no side of things.
What time is it?
I didn't mean to...
What time is it?
Well, it's, 11:59.
Oh, fuck.
Code 328. This is not a drill. Repeat. This is not a drill.
Sure. This is not a drill. This is not a drill. This is not a drill. Cucumber. Which, as you may have guessed, and which I am certain that I do not need to say to you, is without a doubt most definitely not.
Listening to This Is Not a Drill, produced by J.P. Lemke, with voices by J.P. Lemke and Jeremiah Sweeney. As a disclaimer, the composer would like you to know that he does not actually believe in drills. Well, rather, it's more like he does not believe in round drills. Only flat drills. Machine 3 out.
Watch for Pedro show start off third hour. JP Lemke and EDME with Stay On It. Sounds like Jim Brown, right? Get on up, stay on the scene. That's it. Then we had Hubert Selby, Junior Infants, new band out of Dublin, Ireland. How to Steal a Car. And then finally, JP Lemke with EDME with This Is Not a Drill, in parentheses. Right arrow plus picture of cucumber, close parentheses. Okay, so how did the EDM ensemble evolve? Because you said four to begin with. Where are you guys at now?
Well, it's been a journey because, like, the pandemic happened in 2020, right around the time that I became executive director. Like, that was on the horizon. So I remember February 2020, I was asking Lee if we could become a nonprofit, and we were going down that route and we needed to choose like a president and executive director, and I signed up, and then pandemic. So we decided we were going to record once it was summertime. And we had a little more freedom. So we started up the YouTube channel, got a few gigs that were available, like not a lot to be go around. And I also wanted to start us up on major projects. So that turned into the Eugene Garbage Project, which we premiered in May. Oh, is it 2021? Yep, May 2021, after many delays. Like, it was supposed to be a lot sooner than that, but we just kept delaying it, eventually just kind of gave it and live broadcast it rather than having an audience there in person with us. And so, yeah, I can tell you a little bit more about that if you want.
Of course. I mean, it's part of your trip, so bring.
Yeah. So I'd been thinking about the project for a couple of years at the time, but basically what we did is we collected garbage from the community, like whoever was willing to donate whatever trash they had, picked up some from the riverbank as part of a cleanup effort that the city does every year on the Willamette River.
Willamette, and, people, not Willamette.
Yeah. You got it right. So, we then took pictures of all of it we could, and then recorded sounds with it, and that was like a member-wide thing. So
you take pictures of the garbage, and then you record it.
Yep, we recorded sounds with it, yep.
Yeah, how?
Oh, a lot of different ways. I just let everyone else do the sound recording. I collected and edited and composed the piece, but like you could bang it together, rub the garbage.
Okay, I understand. So, like, if you found a can, you could be beating on that can and record that.
Yeah, or try to bow it or put water in it and swish it around.
Sure. But, the thing that you began with was garbage. Yeah, okay.
Yep, garbage,
and,
yep.
But you're repurposing it from garbage to musical instrument.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I made animations with the pictures and composed a piece with the sounds, one that could be controlled live. So it used a camera feed and two gloves, one yellow and one blue, and it just registered the colors on the gloves. And I turned it into an instrument that our performer, Emma Rose Lynn, that she could just do live. And so she sang and she used the gloves to control the electronic instrument. And we did like a 40-45 minute show, I want to say.
Well, and where? At the sports bar?
Not at the sports bar this time. We had Eugene Contemporary Art had a gallery at the time. They don't have it anymore. We broadcast from them.
Ah, so it was more than live. It was also going up over the airwaves.
Yeah. We didn't have a live audience. We couldn't at the time.
Oh, that's right. The situation. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. The last music you gave me, this Glacier Marks Terrain.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Watt for Bebro Show. Last music for this edition. That chunk started with JT Lemke and EDME with Glacier Marks Terrain. Rubber O Cement after that. Captain Menthol Mano Pause on Mercury. And finally, JP Lemke and EDME with the America Battle Cry Pasta Show. Whew. Okay, hip us to this Glacier Marks Terrain.
Yeah, I'll tell you about it. So that was one of a couple of commissions that Lee put out for us. I want to say back in 2020, he reached out to Cheryl Leonard, and she wrote this piece for us, and it's fantastic. What she did is she based it off of formations that she saw in rocks while she went like hiking in Scandinavia. She was out for some composer's retreat thing, I want to say, and there's very unusual formations, and she kind of saw it as like a language, like engraved in the rock. So she took and she emulated that on paper and gave that to us and just said, hey, pick four stone slabs and then four other rocks. And what we do is we mic up the rocks with contact mics, and then we trace her rock language into the slabs.
Whoa. I mean, where do you get an idea like that?
I don't know. Contemporary composition is so interesting and varied. It's all over the place with things like this.
Yeah, and you think Mr. Cage, he kind of broke ground on that. Remember at the beginning of the show I said, for me, when I think of the man, I'm always thinking this question, what is music? And, you know, sometimes it was negative. I remember he was talking about noise. And, like, you trying to talk to your buddy. And in the background, there might be some beautiful Mozart going on. But as far as you and your buddy trying to have a conversation, that's noise.
Yeah, it's the framing device.
So, well, yeah, I was getting at this word conceptual, right? It's the concept, the context, the way you fit it. And so it seems you're looking at for some kind of fundamental, some organic connect. Maybe music's got too removed from where it comes from.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know exactly what the composer's intent was there, but we do play a lot of pieces that are kind of similar to this. We have, in fact, reached back into Cage-like composers, Alison Knowles, Yoko Ono, and their, like, Fluxus scores.
Sure, sure, sure. And have you ever done those? You looked at them, but have you ever performed them?
Yeah, we have.
Okay.
Shoes of Your Choice, that's Alison Knowles.
Okay, that's right. That's right, idiot one. But I mean, that's the whole idea of it. Now this piece is going to be part yours because you're the one performing. Not so precious, the ownership, like the, right? Like sets of instructions and stuff like this. It's all dependent on the delivery, the performance.
Yeah, that's what's wonderful about it.
Yes, yes, yes. Makes it very personal, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Takes away this thing of the musicians or the performers being just like automatons, putting out player piano sheet music, paper with holes cut out in them. Sometimes I think, although I did see something trippy once. I saw Pierre Boulez, this cat took me to see him conduct LA Philharmonic doing this Mandarin, Mr. Bartok's magical Mandarin. And you could tell they were fighting him. And when they let go, yeah, that was a trip. There's something about that. Because I felt it. I fucking felt it. There was something about it. It wasn't just performing instructions, you know. But then they're not given the latitude like I think John Cage and those guys. They weigh more that the performer was supposed to assert themselves, maybe. I don't know. It's the trippy thing about the art, the artist, the whatever, all those kind of contextual kind of things. First, let me ask you for the listeners, where can they find more out about your music on the internet? Is there a website?
Yeah, we have www.edmensemble.org. I try to keep that relatively updated.
Right.
So best to probably just follow us on Instagram. I believe we're at EDM Ensemble.
You probably have links to that at your own website, though, right?
Yes, we do. So if you go to the website, you can link to all our social media, including the YouTube, Bandcamp,
Instagram. Yeah, that's a trip, because with the visuals, that's important. So what's your next plan?
Right now, the big thing going on is we got our second annual New Music Festival coming up in the fall.
Great, great.
So the first one was a big success last year. We did three concerts. We're going to do three concerts again in downtown Eugene. Okay. And if there are composers in the audience, we have a call for scores and a call for guest artists open right now.
You hear that, people? Get on board. Get on board. Man, wonderful. What about recording? Have you gotten into that yet? Like having a JP Lemke Bandcamp page?
You know, I kind of went into the EDM ensemble sphere.
Yeah, sure.
And I haven't. There's nothing much new up there, but I do have a SoundCloud from a billion years ago. Well, maybe about 4 years ago, where you can find some of the pieces that you listen to today on.
Okay. Okay. And do you do music that's non-EDM-y?
Not so much anymore. Just performing for the ensemble these days.
Right, because you want to focus. I understand. Because you can dilute, right?
Yeah.
When I was a Minuteman with D. Boone, I hardly did anything but Minuteman. It just seemed to make sense. So I don't blame you. But you know, if the ensemble, EDM-y, whatever, new works, and you feel like you want to bring it out, come back on the show. The invite's always open to you, JP Lemke.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love what you're doing. I want you to keep on keeping on, please.
Absolutely.
Okay. People, been April 17, 2023 edition of Watt for Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.